Bye.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That Podcast, show number 60.
Woo, Jeff!
60, we made it.
Wow.
And Gretchen and I are in the studio here in Double right now.
But where are we? Tell me again, where are we?
We're in the studio.
We are.
And we're hearing Double. But you're not going to hear Double. We're hearing Double because I have a new setup. Got a new PC. No, I got a new Mac.
Uh-huh.
You liked it, Gretchen, didn't you?
I did. I'm coveting it. Yeah, I'm going to get one,
too. Don't take it when you leave.
I'm going to slip it under my jacket and walk out the door.
So, anyways, hey, thanks. A big shout-out to Ferg from Air Ferg for helping me out with some audio stuff. I still have this doubling effect, and I was like, what's going on? I mean, we're literally hearing echoes of each other. And interestingly enough, what it is, this is the first time I've used a computer, what they call DAW, Digital Audio Workstation, because I've always used a more of a mixer hardware-bound multi-track recorder, which for some reason doesn't have latency. Well, I know why it doesn't have latency now. Anyways, we have latency. So this double is not coming from the computer, Gretchen. I just explained this to her. It's actually hearing our own voice, and then the computer coming back, just a little bit of a hair afterwards, and so we hear a doubling, but I'm gonna go buy, have it on order, another piece of equipment to allow what they call direct monitoring, which allows you to listen to yourself before it goes to the computer and all that, before it goes in, comes out. Oh, isn't that exciting?
Yes.
I'm excited.
Let's hope it works, right?
Good. Yes. So it's a whole totally new way for me of working in the studio. So I'm climbing some learning curves and been playing around with the software as of late, being a total nerd and digging it. It's fun. It's kind of fun.
And we're doing this tonight, which is Sunday, because it's been, 3 weeks since our last one or so?
Yeah. And I was supposed to do this when? Oh, Wednesday. And
Wednesday.
I had the exact same problem that we're having now, but I figured, we can deal with it because we're not going to be able to get together again until I don't know. What is it? End of November or December.
Yes, because I'm off to Hong Kong tomorrow.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, and you know what I discovered? Well,
what'd you discover?
I sort of already knew this, but Hong Kong is the world's fourth most expensive city.
Fourth
most expensive city. And you know what? We have a new first most expensive city in the whole world. Guess what it is?
Well, it's not Tokyo.
Nope, it surpasses Tokyo.
London?
Nope, that's London is number 5.
Dallas.
No. The most expensive U.S. city on the list is New York, and that ranks number 10.
Okay,
so... a very unusual choice here.
I guess an Asian city?
Nope.
No?
Not really.
Not really Asian?
Not really Asian.
Tehran. I don't think that's
that,
it.
That is that world-class city that we all want to go to.
Yes.
Actually, it's Moscow.
Oh.
Moscow, and that's because it moved up 3 spots from a year ago because of a recent property boom. And this is a company who actually looks at cities for expats, like if you were a corporation and you want to know how much you're going to pay your workers. So they look at things like housing, transportation, and food. And they're saying that Moscow, well, usually it's foreign currency rates that push the cities up, and
right.
The dollar's doing so poorly worldwide. But in Moscow's case, the costs were pushed up because of surging costs for living accommodation. Prices for big houses rose 50% over the last year alone. Holy cow, that's a lot.
Wow.
So Moscow was number 1, Seoul, Korea was number 2, Tokyo was number 3, Hong Kong was 4, and London is 5.
Wow.
Yeah. So for those of you traveling, the dollar sucks, and so everywhere we go, we're paying for it. A lot of foreigners are coming here, and a lot of foreigners are buying here, too, buying our investments.
Well, that happened before, in the 80s, I think.
It did.
Remember when Hawaii got totally bought up by the Japanese?
Remember when they bought Rockefeller Center?
Yeah, that was a big...
That was a big deal.
Big deal. Everybody was worried that Americans wouldn't have any assets anymore. It all belonged to foreign nations.
When I checked this week, a British pound was $2.09 US cents. Huh. It was more than double.
Wow.
That is a lot. And it was the all-time low against the euro. It was $1.46 to the euro. Remember
really?
When the euro was launched, it was pegged 1-to-1?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. It's in oil's almost to $100 a barrel.
Huh.
We're going to have a 10% heating bill increase this winter.
Oh, really?
About that. Gas will probably be $4 shortly. My friend in L.A. said it's $3.43.
Well, with global warming, from a heating standpoint, you know, it's getting cheaper every year from that standpoint. But actually, I don't really notice gas prices, although I did last time at the tank because I was really surprised that I had a $40 bill or something like that.
That's when you
notice thought, wow, something's going on here.
Yeah, well, it's going to be like that for a while. I don't know if it'll ever come back down.
Yeah, it's probably our new reality.
I just got back from, I was in Kenya for a while for a vacation, and you know, the U.S. pays the lowest amount of gas prices of any, you know, major industrialized country. And we're so spoiled. But if you ever go to Europe, you know, gas was, what, $6 a liter or something. Well, it was $6, the equivalent of $6 a gallon in Kenya.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Very
interesting. We actually have it pretty good here. So
yeah.
We should be thankful for that, even though we're going to be paying $4 a gallon shortly for gas.
It's a good price. I mean, I remember traveling to Europe a lot on business a few years ago, and they were always jealous of our gas prices.
Right.
So, it seems painful to us because it's all relative. And to be fair, a lot of our communities are built on the idea of cheap gas.
Yes.
So we really, it's hard to survive.
And we are the biggest
consumer. In the cities that we have built around cheap gas, it's hard to survive
without getting in the car
and going.
Yep.
So from a long-term standpoint, it's probably just fine. From a short-term standpoint, it hurts a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, good.
What's going on with you?
I'm not going anywhere next week except to my office to write some presentations.
All right.
So what's been going on? I had people over for coffee today. Had a little, I think maybe 13, 14 people over here at the house.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought coffees from all over the world. I supplied my favorite organic Bolivian from just 4 blocks down. This little mom and pop shop called, I think I talked about it before. They roast their own coffee daily.
Uh-huh.
It's really very good. It's called Coffee Company,
yeah.
If anybody's in the Lakewood area. I think I did mention that before. Mm-hmm. So that's my life. That and the computer.
That's right. Well, the computer is very exciting.
It's very exciting.
I know. I can't wait to get one.
Are you going to get the MacBook or are you going to get one like mine?
I'm going to get one like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't need a laptop.
Yeah, you got a work laptop.
I have a work laptop.
Yeah, that was my thought too.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, I got some health news.
Hey, good.
I heard this guy in NPR, and so I did a little bit of research and I kind of followed up. The guy's name is Gary Taubes, Taubes. He wrote a book called Good Calories, Bad Calories, Challenging the Conventional Wisdom of Diet, Weight Control, and Disease. And it's from I guess he's like a writer for Science Magazine. Basically, what he's saying is very, very much like what Atkins was saying. He said, it's all about carbs. Carbs cause insulin. Insulin causes fat. And it's not more complicated than that. But where he gets controversial is hold on a second.
You mean compared to Atkins, where he differs?
Well, I mean, Atkins was, you know, I suppose so. He's saying saturated fat and cholesterol are not the cause of heart disease. And so health professionals are just gone crazy with this. But he said that's, you know, if you look at obesity and the science of obesity and the research that people have done, he said they're making causal statements from the data. And this is his assertion. And I mean, it sounds, and he's also split up like HDL, I think it's the good one, LDL is the bad one.
Mm-hmm.
He said, well, LDL is not all bad. There's actually two different types of LDL. There's a high-density LDL and there's a low-density LDL. And it turns out saturated fat has the good type of LDL, but a lot of carbohydrates has the bad type of LDL.
Hmm.
So there's a lot of different conventional wisdoms out there. He also said salt does not cause high blood pressure. Fiber is not necessary part of a healthy diet. And on the radio show, he talked about all the studies that have been done associating fiber with colon cancer and everything.
Uh-huh.
And he says, if you look at it, there's a causation going on. There's another factor, and that is lack of less carbohydrates. Because fiber, as you know, it just reduces your overall carbohydrate intake. You subtract that from the carbohydrate intake. So basically, he's saying it's not the quality of calories that matter, but the quantity.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's hard to. This isn't really a diet, and he's not suggesting that it is.
Uh-huh.
He's just saying that he's kind of trying to be a little more scientific, saying it's carbs, folks. Deal with it. We can't really live a life of protein and fat.
Yes, that's true. Because most people who try.
Well, it's just hard. And you do lose energy.
Yeah.
Carbs do provide energy. So, right. You got to put in some carbs. But the advice is wise. You know, one thing that he would say is, you know, watch the breads that you have. Watch the pasta. Just if you don't need it, if you don't love it, don't eat it. But just like anything else we've talked about on this show before, carbs in generally are probably the cheapest form of food for us,
right,
in our culture,
right. Mm-hmm.
So it's also hard to stay away from carbs that way.
Right.
But it's a consideration to think of. Breads just aren't good for you.
But what about the old adage that a calorie is a calorie? And
he's challenging
too many calories.
He is totally challenging that. He says, in fact, exercise doesn't even help. Exercise makes you. I mean, he's not saying don't exercise.
Yeah, well,
he's not like an extreme crazy man.
Right.
But he's saying exercise increases your appetite. So he says if you look at obese people and people who aren't obese, a lot of obese people exercise more than the not obese. That's what
really?
He says, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So has he written a book?
Yes. It's Good Calories, Bad Calories.
Okay.
So.
But it doesn't have any kind of diet plan in it. That seems
no, bad. Because he's not trying to be a dietitian. He's trying to be more of a scientist.
He doesn't want to sell his food line
right.
to all grocery stores.
I know. Well, that's the next logical next step.
He's not licensing himself, huh? Wait,
yeah.
Prostituting himself.
But you know, like Atkins had all the steps for reaching having your body in a state of ketosis and this and that and the other thing.
I never knew anybody who
reached it. He's just not that extreme.
Okay.
The way he phrased it on the radio show, the interview, he said, you know, I'm going to leave others to create diets and so forth if that's what they want to do. This is, you know, based on the research that I've done, looking at the studies that have been done. And he said, this is the really compelling thing. He said, why don't one of these, you know, Bill Gates types of investors
mm-hmm.
He said, for $50,000, I could run a 6-month study that would prove this for the end all, you know? And of course, I'm thinking in the back of my head, why that would make a lot of sense if he's got a theory about obesity. And you know,
right.
It's a huge problem that we have in this country.
Costs us a lot of money.
He says he could prove it with a $50,000 study. He doesn't have the money.
Well.
I'm thinking about sending him and they could call the A-Strike plan or something. I don't know.
Well, maybe some diet company will back him so that he.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe so.
Yeah. So, you know, the writer's strike is still going on, right?
Yeah, I meant to check up on that. What's the latest on it?
Oh, I haven't heard. But so
yeah, that's why we had trouble getting the show out, because our writers are on strike.
So late night talk shows went first. I haven't even checked. I don't know if daytime soaps have gone, but primetime.
Yeah, I wouldn't know. You're asking the wrong person there.
I know. And then primetime dramas are going to be next.
Okay.
Because they're the ones that are.
There's some that are in the can, I'm sure.
Yeah, and then the stockpiles start to run low. So
yeah. This show that we have is actually from 6 months ago because
we canned it
in the can.
Because we knew it. But anyhow, CNN.com did a poll and said to people, so could you survive without TV?
Okay.
So what would you do if you did not have TV? And most of the people who responded are people who already don't have TV. So that was what was interesting about it.
Oh, really?
But the response was overwhelming. Many readers said not only could they survive without it, but they'd actually benefit without it. And the things that got repeated again and again, what do you think people would do without TV?
I would say read.
Read, yep. Read came
I would
up
say
all
spend
all
time
the
with
time.
Family.
Yep, better conversations. Uh-huh.
I would say have sex.
Nobody really said that,
okay.
But okay, that's you, Jeff. Okay, we know what's on Jeff's mind. Okay, and one more. Talking about what you were just talking about, losing weight
eating?
Through fitness. No.
Oh, exercise. Exercising.
Exercise, because you don't do that necessarily while you're watching TV.
But you know, they always say people don't really do what they say and things like that. That sounds fantastic. They're going to do all these wonderful things. I wonder, though.
Well, so the people who actually have done away with TV, and they listed maybe, they edited them, and they picked out maybe 20 choice letters, and they said, okay, I haven't watched TV as of August of last year, so now I'm reading, I've lost weight, I volunteer because they have extra time. I meet people and start conversations. My interests are more varied. And all of that because, oh, and I get more sleep. There is something interesting. I get more sleep. Yeah. So this other woman said, sad to say, but I do allow TV to prevent me from reading, exercising, and doing things that generally require human contact. I thought that was great.
Yeah, that's funny. I know I can see that because I have a few of my favorite programs, and sometimes when I think, oh, I have at home on my TiVo, I've got this program and this program. That sounds nice and relaxing after a long day when, you know, maybe I could do something a little more aggressive.
Yep. And then people who haven't had them for years say this is what they've gotten into this routine and that they spend time outdoors. They cook. A lot of people cook because I guess that takes – it's so time consuming. They enjoy their friends, read, run, bike, kayak. But then what I thought was surprising is that people who say they've given up TV, they keep a small TV connected to an iPod or a DVD player. They all have DVD players. So even if you've given up the TV, you still have a DVD.
Right.
So you can at least keep up with the latest movies.
Okay.
And a lot of people watch things online.
Yeah.
So that was interesting. So, you know, maybe TV is going to go the way of the dinosaur at some point. You know, maybe it is going to be replaced by computers.
Well, I was just having this conversation with somebody, and I think that I'm not saying anything new here, but I think that sort of idea between the difference of a computer and a TV is going to go away. Probably sooner than later. I think what we're going to have is a line coming in.
So there'll be content developed just for your computer, right? That bypasses, which already is.
I think the paradigm of the computer and TV are just going to be merging.
Mm-hmm.
It's all going to be bits and bytes of data, of on-demand data.
Yes, on-demand data of what you want specifically.
Right. And that'll include audio only, you know, aka radio. That'll include computer.
Yep.
We'll have outlets around the house that you just plug your device in.
Right. Yeah, that's
and true. It'll work. So I think that demarcation between computer and TV will go away. And I don't know. Maybe it'll take longer than what I think, but it just seems very logical.
Well, if this strike goes on as long as it did when they had it, 20 years ago, when the last one
was?
Oh,
is that right?
It was, 50, how long was it? 20-some weeks, and it cost $500 million. Who knows? Maybe there'll be alternate content out there that people won't miss it as much.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Hmm. Well, as long as we're talking about that, I do have a similar issue here.
Oh, okay.
Let me look it up because it was in the back. It's about the Dallas newspaper, the Dallas Morning News.
Yes, the Dallas Morning News.
Right.
We can't get my subscription right if their life depends on it.
Well, that may be part of the problem here.
Oh, my God. They are horrible.
The last audited circulation they had was 477,000 back in March 2005. They just released their new numbers, and they're at 375,000, which is a 28% decline in 2.5 years.
That's what's happening to newspapers, right?
Now, what they said is part of that loss is actually intentional, and this is interesting as well. The Morning News has dropped high-cost subscribers. So there are subscribers in outlying areas that it just costs more to deliver than it does to get the revenue. They've got rid of them. So it's part of it, but it doesn't explain. It probably explains a fairly small fraction of it. But what's interesting is on a larger scale, the Dallas Morning News has got like the largest hit in the nation. But big newspapers like the New York Times, they've lost, 4.51% in the last 6 months. Boston Globe, 6.66% in the last 6 months.
Whoa, those are some pretty big numbers.
Pretty big numbers, yeah. So
I'd heard overall newspaper readership was down at least 10%.
Okay, yeah. Well, it sounds like that's consistent with these numbers.
Because there's not demand for new technical news that's 24 hours old. Or at least several hours old.
Right.
Because most of these papers print late into the evening.
Right. Well, and you have everything on the internet. Now, one thing, this little thing that I pulled doesn't say in the same period how many of these newspaper websites, what has their demand,
viewership,
how much has there been up? So I think it's clear we're shifting.
But the other thing, too, is that they need those numbers to generate the ad revenue.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So,
no, it's
so that's
it's
100,000 subscribers, and if you're let's see, who advertises a lot? Macy's.
Right.
And you're thinking you're getting 100,000 more viewers than you are, readers than you are, that's, you know, totally not fair to the advertisers.
Yeah.
But that's why they audit them every year.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Now, here's another interesting thing along the same lines. In the, what is it? Berkeley School of Information Management Systems calculated how much unique information was produced. Now, I have no idea how one would go about doing that, but just produced in society in 1999 and again in 2002. In 1999, that number was between, looks like 2.1 million terabytes and 3.2 million terabytes of information. Now, the size of that gap shows you just how uncertain this is, because you're basically estimating
right
all the information produced in, I don't know if it's country or the world.
Was it, what was the period again?
This was in 1999.
Okay.
But now in 2002, they did it again, and the numbers were between 3.4 million terabytes and 5.6 million terabytes. So that represents a 19% annual growth rate between 1999 and 2002. So we're having less newspaper readership.
Right.
But the amount of information that's being generated in the world, and I assume that assumes businesses, you information period,
right,
advertising, whatever, has increased by so much. So we're getting it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
We're receiving it somehow.
And can we receive more? Can the average person receive that much more?
Well, I'm sure that we are. I mean, I'm sure if you're
don't,
the average...
Don't you get information overload?
I'm sure if you're the average person, Gretchen, then you're the information that you've had to receive, or at least the information you've had to sift through, I guess, has been increasing 19% a year. That's
why I always feel like I can't keep up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
That's why this show is 6 months old. In the can. It's not 6 months old. It is November 11th, 2007. Happy Veterans Day.
There you go.
And a big thanks to, I was just thinking about
big
this today.
To
big
veterans.
Thanks to veterans of all of our foreign wars.
Did you see Cheney laying the wreath at the unknown soldier today?
Yeah, he was very solemn and stately like he should be. And I mean, I don't like those people, but I can't fault him for honoring good people.
But George couldn't do it because he was busy entertaining Aaron Crawford.
Oh, is that right?
Mm-hmm. He was entertaining...
the French guy?
No, the German Chancellor, Angela
the
Merkel.
The woman, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
How was he entertaining her? What is this madness that makes my motor run and my legs too weak to stand? I go from sadness to acceleration like a robot at your command.
So talk about all this megabyte, or would you say terabytes,
terabytes
of data?
Mm-hmm.
Well, here's
millions and millions
here's
and billions
terabytes
of terabytes
of data that we don't need. Okay, did you hear that during the whole Britney Spears divorce debacle that's going on right now, that the court papers are showing her spending, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's actually an article about her spending. So just because this is so absurd. She spends lavishly on clothes and entertainment. She brings in $737 of monthly income and doesn't save or invest any of it.
How much monthly income?
$737,000.
Wow. That's almost as much as I make. It's amazing for doing this show.
So she has less about $50,000 in mortgages on two houses a month, $16,000 for clothes, $100,000 for entertainment, gifts, and vacation. Spends about $4,700 on meals and dining out, even though we often see her being photographed eating fast food.
Right.
Spends zero on education.
How much does she spend on panties?
It would be pretty limited. Spent zero in education, savings, and investments, and gave $500 a month in charitable contributions. She pays her ex, Kevin Federline, $15,000
a
month.
Her paying $500 a month is great per month for charity, but that's like me paying a cent a month.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't make any sense, right?
It
absolutely does not. I mean, what would you say, $500 a month when you make $737,000? Where is she saving any?
Where's that money going?
Well, there you go. So, but this was interesting is that just the report.
To KFed, man.
No, he gets $15,000 and he gets $20,000 in spousal support that's going to end on November 15th. So, what was interesting about this is that that still leaves her somewhere around $530,000 a month unaccounted for. But somebody even commented, I can't believe this is news. Who cares? Get a life and read some real news. Can't we get reporters talking about something important like Darfur or Iraq or anything other than this?
And yet we have limited podcasting time. And what does Gretchen bring up?
I want to talk about this because this is part of that 19 trillion trigabytes of bullshit that we all have to sift.
It's now 19 million and 102.
I know.
Because of your ad.
But see, that's part of the problem. And actually, I saw the movie Lions for Lambs last night, and actually one of the really funny stories they did was it's a movie about the press versus government. Well, that's part of it, but they actually show this network, and the network has been bought by a conglomeration of companies, which they make soap. So now the network can no longer focus on news. It has to focus on ad revenue. And so they show their main reporter, and sure enough, they interrupt the news to report on the star, which is supposedly taking on, you know, supposed to be Britney Spears and K-Fed divorcing. Divorce battle, right? And then they go back to the regular newscast, but that was the, you know, we're going to break
breaking
in now.
News,
breaking
yeah.
news. To see the divorce, because now entertainment is legitimate news, and that's one of the things that they actually that brought up in the movie was talking about, you know, is what has the news industry become when so many of the people are devoted to covering entertainment,
right?
And that's what people want. So you give your audience that, yet it's bad for you. You know, it's like dessert all the time, you know, and
right.
that's what you're covering. And so that's why all of a sudden Britney Spears' divorce papers make the news. When, can you imagine even hearing about this 20 years ago? Like, what?
Oh, you're bumping up against the...
Oh, sorry.
I can hear it.
Oh. So, I mean, this never would have made the news. But now there's so much news media devoted to this.
Right.
You know, there is a whole industry.
There's a whole industry
built
on entertainment.
Around this, right?
Yeah.
When you look at how many magazines can you buy of this, how many paparazzi pictures can be bought and sold.
I mean, the big blogs and like Paris Hilton and all Perez Hilton and the other blogs of celebrities. I even watch them. It's just mindless fun.
It's mindless
entertainment.
It's completely mindless. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it does take the time away from something else. Is that what we should really be thinking about, or should we?
Or is it just a supplement? It takes our time, but. I don't know if it takes newsprint time because they still cover the stuff, don't they? I guess. I mean, it's not as much. Is it funner to read about Iraq or about Britney Spears' panties?
It's obviously it's you know, for some people it's definitely would be Britney Spears. But the reason I brought it up is because technically it is not news, yet our culture has made it news.
Right.
So.
But it's not just our culture. There's other cultures.
Well, I think the U.S. in particular is obsessed with it.
I think Britain was obsessed with it before we...
Britain was too.
Us,
yeah.
though.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, because of all the royals that don't really...
Right.
That don't really add a whole lot, but they are interesting to cover. Yeah.
And they're all sort of inbred. To all our British listeners, we love the Queen.
She was named one of the most 50 most glamorous women, and that was kind of controversial.
It was a courtesy.
British Vogue named her one of the 50 most glamorous women, and everybody was like, really?
Really?
You know, she's pretty kind of stodgy. But,
really?
Yeah.
That was obviously done for political reasons.
Yeah, I kind of think so.
Just, you know, tip the hat to the queen. Tip the hat to the lady. Can't be a bad thing if you're a country's magazine. Well, did you know what seniors are doing more than what you would like to think?
Not with the sexually transmitted diseases, right?
Well.
We knew about that.
We knew about that. And I guess this goes towards that. They're having a lot of sex. And I've got some numbers to share with you.
Way to go, seniors.
57
days. We have something to look forward to, Jeff.
Yes.
We can get sex as we get older.
I can't wait. It'll be nice. So, one thing that you sort of ask why are they doing these studies, and this article that I found spent a lot of time explaining sort of why, you know, is this just because we're this kind of society that likes Britney Spears or, you know, just mindless stuff. But it said it's because sexual activity is a very key part of health. If people aren't having sex, there's usually other stuff going on, either personal problems or mm-hmm. health-related issues. So it's a good window into,
right.
you know, people's health in general.
And it's a good window into the health of a relationship, too, if you're having sex.
Right. Oh, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. So 57 to 85-year-olds is this study comprises of it. And it said interest does fall off when people reach their 70s. So they did find sort of a pretty big drop-off at that point. But more than a quarter of those up to age 85 still had sex within the last 12 months. And they say that drop-off in
That's a pretty big stretch there, Jeff.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my God.
The drop-off has a lot to do with health or lack of a partner. A lot of women get older and there's no
partners.
So it's hard to have sex if you don't have any partners. More than half of those aged 57 to 75 said they gave or received oral sex, as did a third of the 75 to 85-year-olds they surveyed.
Hmm. I wonder if they're wishful thinking or if they really did.
I know.
Wonder if they lie on those just like other people supposedly lie
yeah.
on the other
surveys. The survey was done with a two-hour face-to-face interviews.
Oh, okay.
And they said they had 3,005 men and women. And they also took blood, saliva, and other samples. And they're trying to get like to the health.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe making some correlations with health. So here's a list of some of the results. Sex with a partner in the previous year was reported at 73% from people from the age of 57 to 64, 53% of those from 64 to 75, and 26% over 75. Of those who were active, most said they were doing it two or three times a month or more.
Whoa.
It's pretty good.
Whoa, yeah.
Pretty good. Pretty, as Larry David would say, pretty good. Women at all ages were less likely to be sexually active than men, but they also lacked partners. Far more were widowed than the guys. People whose health was excellent or very good were nearly twice as likely to be sexually active as those in poor or fair health. It seems obvious, but I think it's kind of an important thing to think about. Half of people having sex reported at least one related problem. Most people, most common in men was erection trouble, 37%. In women, it was low desire, 43%. Vaginal dryness, 39%. And inability to have an orgasm, 34%. Wow, women are so complex. So those are all women problems. And men basically just have the erectile problem,
which is kind of
a showstopper. But
well. But wait, what about Viagra and Cialis
and all that now? That's a good point.
There is help.
Oh, here we go. One out of seven men use Viagra or other substance. Now, in that age group, I would have thought it'd be more than one out of seven.
Higher.
Much higher, like almost everybody. Like why wouldn't you?
Why wouldn't you?
In
yeah.
a way, you know?
Yeah.
Only 22% of women and 38% of men had discussed sex with the doctor since age of 50. Now, this is another reason why they did this study is because older people, in general, they found to be a little more conservative, so they're less apt to talk about their sexual difficulties mm-hmm. to their doctor. And again, it's a window to health.
Yeah.
You should have conversations with your doctor about sex.
Huh.
So let me see if I got anything else on this topic. The participants here, most of them were married. By the time they were 75 to 85, only 37% of women had spouses, compared to 71% of men. Isn't that something?
Well, yeah.
Roughly 10% of those in the survey were black. More than 6% were Hispanic. I don't know if that really matters too much. So, yeah, that's about it. That's all I have on that study. But
wow, that's interesting.
I think it's kind of encouraging. I think the lesson there for us middle-aged folks is keep your health going. Try to find good, long-lasting relationships. And maybe you can have sex. Till I'm old and gray.
Oh, my God. Well, speaking of getting old, I saw this article in Wall Street Journal, and I thought, wow, this is kind of interesting. It's called Retailers Are Trying to Target One of Fashion's Most Elusive Markets, Middle-Aged Women Who Don't Want to Dress Like Middle-Aged Women. And I'm thinking, okay, that's me. They're writing an article about me, right?
Right.
I'm middle-aged.
But you've never dressed like a middle-aged woman. Because there are women that you know that are in the middle-aged, and they're at an awkward time of dress. They
yes.
can't dress like the young people. They
yes.
don't know what to do.
Right.
And so a lot of them kind of look frumpy for
yes,
a while.
Absolutely.
I think that's more the market. You've never looked frumpy.
Why, thank you, Jeff. Well, that's what they're talking about, is that this is a really hard age to dress, but there's so many of them that retailers can't ignore them. There's 40 million baby boomer women, and they define that as women born between 1946 and 1964.
Okay.
And they spend more than previous generations. Many view themselves as youthful, but up until now, it's been really hard to figure out what they want to wear. So several retailers are trying again to, there's been several chains that have gone defunct because they labeled themselves clothes for older women, and it's just women didn't want to shop there or be associated with them.
Right.
But now Bloomingdale's is coming out with a new department called Quotation, and it's going to sell casual clothes for 35 to 50 year old urban women's and professional moms. And they're also pitching for younger women too. So it has a hip vibe that's going to appeal to this broad cross section. So they're actually, what they're finding is these chains that are doing well, like Ann Taylor or Chico's, are now trying to appeal to younger women so that their core market of middle-aged women will feel youthful and not older and frumpy, like what you're talking about.
Well, it's interesting because, it's a great concept. But
so now they have younger models with long hair in Chico's ads instead of the middle-aged women with gray hair.
Right.
You know?
So well, a lot of middle-aged women, they get into business and they cut their hair. And then the mothers, this is always something that used to crack me up. This especially happens in the Midwest, but it happens down here too. I've seen it. They start wearing the sweaters that are colorful. Now, they do it for the kids.
Right.
And I actually respect that. I think that's fun. The kids enjoy it. But if I'm their husband, take the sweater off before I come home. Kind of do something. Something to look nice for me.
Or the sweatpants.
Every now and then.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. I would be so mad to be one of those husbands. And yet these women, they end up, you know, maybe their bodies aren't as good as they used to because they've had some kids. But they go out with their husbands in these sweaters that are completely not sexy. Their hair is short. And they're like, you're not even trying anymore.
And sensible shoes.
And sensible shoes. Yep. You're not even trying to look good for your husband anymore.
Comfort.
And then you complain because your husband's not making advances towards you. Well,
or your husband's looking
God.
For younger women. Yeah. Yeah.
Or even the same age women that just have a little sex appeal.
Yep.
Why would you take the sex appeal completely away from yourself? Oh my gosh.
I know.
That's
I
a
agree.
Pet peeve. So hopefully these kind of marketing messages will stop some of that.
But turn around and look at the men too, though. I mean, come on.
I'm sure there's a lot of men that do the same thing. I don't know. They don't wear the mommy sweaters, but what do they do?
They
wear something.
But they wear, what's the most effort they put into it? It's what, a polo shirt and a pair of chinos. That's the
uniform that we all wear.
That's the uniform, yeah.
Yeah, but we're not encouraged by society to wear anything else, really. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of what everybody wears. It's conventional. That's a little bit different than the mommy sweater.
Yeah, no, that's true.
The mommy sweater is an intentional statement to the world that I'm not a sexual being anymore. I'm a mother.
Oh, and mom should be sexy. Look at Desperate Housewives.
I remember at American Airlines when I was there, you know, I went because I was there at the time when a lot of women got married. Uh-huh. And they were, you know, single, nice looking women before they got married. Then they would get married, and then a couple of years later, now they wouldn't necessarily wear mommy sweaters to work,
right.
But they would cut their hair.
Yep.
And they would look, again, they're telling the world something. It's like, I'm not a sexual person anymore. I am short hair because it's easy. I'm practical and I'm in business and I don't care to look hot for my husband because he's stuck with me.
And that's probably when they became Republican, right? We did that story about that Democratic women were single. And then when they got married, they moved to the suburbs and they had one child. They became overwhelmingly Republican.
That's right.
They joined the party. That must do it for you.
That must do it.
That must
be something that happens. Can I go on with another pet peeve as long as I'm mad? All right. This is probably a Texan. I was going to say Texasian.
No, we're Texans.
A Texan pet peeve. But you know how we have on the freeways, the access roads, you can normally at a big intersection take one of the U-turns.
Yes.
Yeah.
And just go around
underneath the underpass.
And get back on the other way.
And what is that? What's the advantage of doing that, Gretchen?
Well, if you're going the wrong direction, it lets you turn around.
Without stopping at the stoplight.
Yes, that's true.
Okay. So every now and then, I have to do that every day now to my new job.
Mm-hmm.
And usually no problem. Uh-huh. It's totally great. Every now and then, there's an idiot that stops when there's a stoplight.
Oh, that, instead of going under.
Instead of following the U-turn, he stops at an arbitrary place because I guess he thinks
he's got to stop
that he has to stop.
Right.
When there's no stop line.
Yeah, right.
There is no, if you think about it for just a half second, there's no reason to ever stop. The only place you would stop is when you got to the end of your U and you had to watch for the merging traffic coming in. Mm-hmm. And there is a sign that says yield or whatever or stop.
Right.
I have honked, and people are, it doesn't happen often, I would say, out of 4 months worth of doing this, it's happened twice.
Uh-huh.
But I can't think of a, and I'm pretty forgiving on people in cars, because people make mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
That one really makes me think, that person is an idiot. Stopping, this is the whole reason for this U-turn, is that you don't have to stop. There's nothing to stop for. You're not competing with anybody for this next space you are about to enter.
That's right. That's right.
That's my pet peeve because it happened to me last week.
And no matter what you did, he wouldn't move. He or she wouldn't move.
I'm nice. I honked once very, very tenderly.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a jerk.
Yeah.
You never know who's got the gun, right?
Right.
And they did, because I thought, well, maybe they're in the middle of something.
Right.
Maybe they're a little bit confused. They never did anything. And so I just kind of,
Let them sit there.
I went to work, 3 minutes late. Oh, well. But no, they probably didn't know why I honked.
Why you honked, right.
Yeah.
They thought it was you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They're probably thinking, that person.
That's jerk.
And sometimes I fantasize or think about, what if we had the ability to talk to all the drivers next to us within a certain radius?
Oh, no, I always thought that would be fun.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
If people had cell phones posted and you could actually call them.
Well, that'd be too much effort, but just automatically everybody that's within a certain radius, all of a sudden you're in the same frequency in your car and you can just talk.
Oh, that's an idea. Yeah.
Because then, some guy was following me on the highway really close last night and I was going above the speed limit. And I was just really surprised and I wanted to ask him, it's like, I'll let you go by. Obviously, you're in more of a hurry than I am. But right now, I'm not because I'm still passing people on my right. It seems a little bit dangerous for you to be so close.
Mm-hmm.
Just be a little bit patient with me and it'll be okay.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But I couldn't say that.
Right.
It's hard to have that conversation.
Yeah, I guess that's why I thought it'd be interesting if the cell phone numbers were
posted.
Or if you saw somebody you wanted to talk to, you could flip a sign and post your cell phone number.
Hey, baby.
Hey, baby. I would have called you.
Somehow I think there'll be a lot more crashes.
Exactly. Oh, I missed that last digit.
Be a lot more
catch
accidents.
Up to them.
Well, speaking of which, this natural natural segue to another topic of mine. Did you see the city of Highland Park? The city of Highland Park is a ritzy city.
Drove through it.
In the middle, it's in the middle of our fair city of Dallas. It's really kind of strange.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they call it the bubble for that very reason. But they are, I think in the next month, they're expected to pass a resolution that says you cannot have a cell phone in your hand in a school zone.
Okay.
Because there's a big concern. There hasn't been a problem yet, but parents are concerned that other parents are paying attention to their cell phones and they could run over a kid.
Okay.
Now, this has been exacerbated by all that Mockingbird construction because people are taking the
side streets. Yeah.
Dallas is I'm sure every city has this issue. There's like, Dallas doesn't have any real easy ways to go east-west.
Mm-hmm.
It's surprising that the city is built up that way, but it just doesn't. It's kind of like a crossway. So you've got a few big arteries that are Mockingbird, relatively small street.
Right.
Now, even that has been diverted because they're trying to widen it. Actually, I'm not quite sure what they're doing, but I believe they're widening it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So the traffic is being diverted into around schools and smaller. And Mockingbird is already a small neighborhood street to begin with, but it's just
It's four lanes plus a turning lane, but yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But in a lot of states, they have hands-free laws. Like in the state of New York and state of New Jersey, you had to be hands-free the entire time anyhow.
So, right.
I don't see this as being any different, right?
Well, and this is only for school zones. Well, okay, New Jersey has, I'm glad you mentioned that, mm-hmm. has handheld ban plus all cell phones for learner's permits holders and intermediate license holders and school bus drivers. So they do have the handheld ban. Now, my question is...
When handheld, I meant you have to be on a hands-free headset to drive in those in
right.
New York and New Jersey.
And New York, you're right, has a handheld ban.
Yeah.
Texas has a ban of all cell phones by intermediate license holders. I think it's like the first 6 months.
Okay.
As well as school bus drivers, while passengers 17 or younger are present. Utah has a handheld ban. Washington has a bans text messaging.
that is kind of dangerous. I've tried to do that before.
I've tried to do that before, too.
That is really...
It's not very easy.
That's why that guy was on your ass. You were driving. You forgot to mention you were text messaging.
Yeah.
Well,
I was text messaging him. Hey, what are you doing?
35. I was text messaging.
Yeah. So is it like if I've got my iPhone and I've got the earplugs on it and I'm having a phone conversation,
uh-huh.
I'm okay?
Yep.
Now, what I can't do, because I don't have a... handheld
But you are supposed to be able to turn it off and on with a voice command,
right? That's what I mean. That's what I can't do. I can't dial anybody with a voice command. Everything is to do that by hand.
You do have to touch it. Well, technically I think that's not okay, but
So I'm actually against the law when I'm
I don't know actually.
Well, in Texas not yet, but
yeah, not in Texas you're not yet, but mine had a voice command when I was in New York and New Jersey, so
yeah, that would be helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think they're going to build that into the iPhone, probably.
Yeah, that's probably the second generation. You get to trade in your old one for another $500 phone, Jeff.
Yeah,
and then exactly. You'll get a $100 rebate.
Can't beat that rebate. That helped me buy my computer.
So did you, anything else on that?
No, that's it.
Oh, okay. So did you hear that as a nation, America is unhappy right now? Have you heard that?
Oh, poor babies.
I know. This is 1 year from the presidential election, right?
Mm-hmm.
A new poll by Washington Post ABC has found that Americans are deeply pessimistic and eager for a change in direction from the agenda and priorities of the Bush administration.
I think I read that.
They polled 1,100 adults.
But they're not against Republicans necessarily, right?
No, it's not about Republicans.
Right.
And this is what's interesting. The number one concern is... actually, it's the economy, followed by the war in Iraq and growing dissatisfaction with political environment in Washington. Lowest public assessment of the direction of the country in more than a decade. Just 24% of the country thinks that we're on the right track. Three quarters think that we want the next president to chart a different course. Obviously, Democrats want a new direction, but so do three quarters of independents and half of Republicans. I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah.
More than 6 out of 10 people said the war in Iraq was not worth fighting. 2/3 gave the national economy negative marks. Fourth consecutive month, President Bush's approval ratings are at a career low. 33% approved of the job he's doing. And Congress is even worse. Only 28% approve of their job. It's very, very dismaying, you know, a year out. And we're basically going to know by February who the candidates are going to be.
I think it's looking more and more like it's going to be Hillary on the Democratic side, because she's leading in polls in both Iowa and in New Hampshire, the first two primaries.
Mm-hmm.
Although Iowa, she's close.
Right. Did you see Barack Obama at all this morning?
I didn't. Was he on the Sunday's shows?
Spoke for an hour on Meet the Press.
Oh, good. I've got it on TiVo.
He was so eloquent. I mean, he is really an eloquent speaker. He has.
You're saying that just because he's black. Why can't he just?
No, I think if you would think that, you know, envision President Bush talking for an hour to say Tim Russert, you know,
with
just
any
one
kind of
on one,
with any kind of intelligence,
just without sort of laughing and going, oh, the guffaws he'd make about pronouncing the words wrong.
Well, the thing about Bush is he can't get into depth on anything. He's all just the whatever his aides have been telling him.
But a lot of people say he's actually very intelligent. He just does a very good job of hiding it.
Yeah, maybe that's what his
very like Tony Snow, whom I think is an intelligent
man. Oh yeah, I think he is.
He said that, you know what, Bush was actually very intelligent, but he would mess up words, and that comes across as being stupid. But he's actually a very smart person when you get him off of the public eye, and he's just a private person.
And that could be true, but it's not the messed up words that, you know, that's funny for the late night talk shows to joke about. You know, they do it with Dan Quayle, but the thing about Bush is in the public eye, he just never got, you could never see him debating something of depth. That wouldn't really have with Bush. He's a tagline kind of guy.
But he did debate Kerry, didn't he? Yeah, he did.
Oh, I mean, in a presidential debate where you talk about a topic for 4 minutes. Right, I'm talking about having an hour.
Oh, like sit for an hour. Yeah,
sit for an hour and talk about something you know Obama can do. Hillary can do.
Yep.
Joe Biden can do it very well.
Giuliani could do it.
I'm sure Romney, Giuliani McCain. Could do it. And Romney, yeah. I'm sure they all could do it. That's one thing Bush can't do.
Fred Thompson last week attempted to do it for 20 minutes, and it was... I thought it was sad. I just think he's an actor with not a lot of substance. But Obama is very he's an eloquent speaker, and he certainly he would make a very good diplomat.
Yeah.
I mean the way he comes across, just very even keeled and very intelligent. And
I think it strike me that he has very high likability ratings.
Mm-hmm,
he's
I
just
can see
his
that.
His only. Worry about is people's worried about him is as he's untested, seems
right.
a little
experience?
Naive or right. not experienced about it, right. especially about foreign matters.
Mm-hmm. And it's been a very long time since we elected a senator.
Right.
And
yeah.
All these
it's
senators
so hard.
Are running.
Yeah.
Only one governor, right, Richardson.
Right.
Are there any other governors running that I can think of right now?
Mitt Romney was a governor.
Romney was a governor, and Kucinich wasn't he governor of Ohio? Or no, he was mayor of Cleveland.
Oh, that's right.
And
but
a
he's
senator.
But he's a senator now, right?
Right. So it's been a really long time since we were elected.
Whenever I think of Kucinich, you know, Saturday Night Live, I still watch. I know it's not quite the media center it used to be, but I still think of the Kucinich caricature on SNL.
His new wife?
It's played by Amy Poehler. And it's like a, you know, little,
oh, she
little
does
pixie.
Him? That's right, the little pixie
of a guy. And of course, that his wife
and now
is
he's
his
got
beauty
the,
queen.
The wife is real tall.
Right.
And towers over him and has a pierced tongue. Right?
Yes.
Do they have UFOs buzzing around him?
Yes, he's the one that said he saw a UFO. I mean, he's just basically saying, I know I'm not going to win. I'm here for the debate. I mean, he's a smart guy.
He is
obviously.
A smart guy.
Yeah.
He's a very smart guy.
Yeah.
And so is Ron Paul.
Oh, Ron Paul got a lot
Ron
of interest.
Ron Paul is unbelievably interesting.
Yeah.
I got to say. Would he make $2 million in a day?
Oh, really?
He raised more money in one day than the other candidates.
Wow.
Any of the other candidates. $2.4 million or something?
That's amazing.
That is amazing. Yeah. Internet darling, Ron
but
Paul.
I saw that thing too, and it's a lot of Republicans are getting strength by the fact that these people in general are not necessarily blaming the Republicans. And they're blaming the fact because this president is really unpopular. Well, this president is really unpopular. And I think they're realizing that from both sides of the aisle that Bush doesn't really represent your typical Republican, you know?
Yeah.
There are smart people that actually take that political stance too.
I saw a snippet of a story that was, I guess people are now asking the question, is Bush going to go down as the worst president in history?
But
I think they ask that about every unpopular one.
Like
Jimmy Carter, did he go? I mean, there was some talk about that when he was still in power.
What did I hear? No, I heard a historian on NPR talk about the worst presidents, and I think his take was history will decide, but Bush will probably be in the bottom five. But he said there was a John Pierce or somebody that was like the worst. And he named all this stuff, apparently just an incompetent fool. If it's not Pierce, I'm sorry to destroy the Pierce name, but it was somebody like that. But this historian did, his opinion was that Bush would be in the bottom five.
But did you hear his dad came out this week to say he was not as bad as everybody made him out to be? His dad had to defend him. His dad said he's been misrepresented, and that Saddam really was a horrible, horrible man for many years, and that we had every right to go after him. And, you know, it was sort of like, stop beating up on my kid, was the impression I got.
Daddy's going to come in and beat you up. But now see, that's a great contrast.
Oh, yeah.
He didn't agree with George Bush Sr. all the time because of his political views.
But he was still competent.
But this guy was
smart.
Not just competent, but really well-read, really smart.
Really
he
smart.
Could debate you for an hour on a topic of depth about policy, about foreign affairs.
Right.
Very intelligent man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was a cream of the crop guy. He was a true Yale guy.
Right. Absolutely.
It's not, you don't get that with the son.
No. Nope. Nope. And then this came out a couple weeks ago. Did you see the new study by the Congressional Budget Office that the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan could total $2.4 trillion through the next decade, which equates to $8,000 for every man, woman, and child in the country? And this is what was also hotly debated, because people were saying, well, they shouldn't overestimate like that. And the previous estimate was $1.6 trillion. But what this study did was add $700 billion in interest. They forgot the interest on the debt. So in order to fund all these conflicts, we're obviously borrowing the money, and that's going to be $705 billion in interest over the next decade. And, you know, in the next decade, we're going to be around, hopefully.
Yeah.
And so, and the Iraq war accounts for 80% of that total. So it's $1.9 trillion with $564 million in interest. The numbers are so big they boggle the mind, is what they're saying. And that's basing the estimates on 75,000 troops would remain in Iraq and Afghanistan through 2017, which is 10 years from now. And it's all speculative. Everybody's saying it's speculative. But as of September 30th, both wars combined cost $600 billion. Adjusted for inflation, that's higher than the cost of Korea and Vietnam. March of 2003, the Bush administration estimated that the Iraq war would cost no more than $50 billion. Whoops. We're a little bit off there.
See, $604
billion versus
$50
billion.
It's either absolutely lying or absolutely incompetence.
Well, don't we think in this case it was incompetence? We knew we could knock them out quickly, but we just thought they would welcome us with open arms.
Mm-hmm. And flowers and bands.
But the $8,000 per man, woman, and child, I mean, that's what's a killer, because how many...
It's such a burden on our economy.
That is such a burden, you know, when we could be using it for Social Security, which we're going to need, and all those other things, and schools, and obese children, all those other things that are coming.
Yeah, the kids are getting fatter.
Yes, they are.
And the globe is getting warmer.
Yep.
So, but here's a good thing of niceness.
What?
Did you hear about this one laptop per child program? This is headed up by Nicholas Negroponte, and this article doesn't say who contributes to it, but they are hoping to spread these $200 laptops to school children in developing countries, and the production is starting next month.
Really?
Yes, they're called XO laptops. They are being built in Chinese factories. My manufacturer, Quanta Computer, and they originally actually estimated these computers to cost $100 a piece. But at the end of the day, they're now estimating them to be $188. But they're kind of cool. They're going to roll these out first to children, school children in Uruguay, Peru, and Mongolia. And people in North America will actually be able to buy them for themselves if they buy two and donate one to overseas kids.
That's interesting.
But they're cheap. I might buy one. And get this. The small yet rugged XO requires low power and can be recharged by hand.
Wow.
Cool. Have a screen that can be read in full sunlight. Maybe they're assuming these kids don't have any shelter.
Right.
And boast a user interface designed specifically for children. So it'd be perfect for you. No, isn't that something, though?
You mean somebody with a childish equivalent on a computer? Doesn't know how to boot it up or clean it or anything?
So if you guys want to check it out, I haven't checked out the website yet, but it's www.laptopgiving.org. That's www.laptopgiving.org.
It's not your CD slot or the Unix on which you are based. You make my lap hot, 'cause underneath your aluminum case there's love. And I forgive your strange one-button mouse. I forgive the way your keyboard leaves marks on your screen. I can overlook a fault or two for a laptop like you.
Well, you know, since I'm on my way to China, I'm actually going to be in Hong Kong, but I am going to go to China for one day. I read this amazing series of articles on, well, I think most of you know I work for a company that manufactures goods in China. And, you know, you can't turn around any day in the past 4 months and there hasn't been a report on a new item with lead in it, right?
Right.
So Americans express outrage that how could the Chinese make toys that poison our children? You know, there's high levels of lead. Lead has all kinds of proven problems for children, especially.
These laptops are made out of lead,
yes,
by the way.
Yes, laptops are going to have lots of lead in them. Lead in the screen.
All the excess lead,
all the excess
all the
excess
lead that
from
they
the
had
toys.
To take out of Elmo.
Right, right. But here's another, here's an interesting problem that I had not heard about. But this, the Salt Lake Tribune actually did a really good 5-day story on the cost of making these toys. Chinese workers who make the toys and countless other products for America touch and inhale carcinogenic materials every day, all day long, including benzene, lead, cadmium, nickel, and mercury.
In Chinese plants.
These are
Why?
Chinese
Because their
plants.
Environmental
laws are not
laws
enforced.
Just aren't stringent.
So many of the workers are dying, and many have fatal occupational diseases, and many of them are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s. Every time I go to a factory, and I've been in a lot of factories, you never see old people, right? You see a lot of people that barely look barely look old enough to be working, but by law, I'm confident to say I know they're over whatever the legal working age is in that particular province, 18. But you rarely see anybody in their 40s or 50s. You don't see anybody with gray hair. And now it turns out that many of the workers are dying slow, difficult deaths caused by hazardous substances that they use to produce products for the world. Some say the workers are paying the real price for America's cheap goods. And in terms of responsibility to Chinese society, this is a big problem for Americans because we don't even see it. You don't even hear about it. You don't know about it. But there's toxins and hazards in virtually every industry, including furniture, shoes, car parts, electronics, jewelry, clothes, toys, batteries. And this was all, they did actual interviews with workers, and then they collaborated it with legal documents and medical records.
Right.
And most of the products that are made are the Chinese workers lack health protections that have been required in the U.S. for half a century, such as protective masks, boosts that limit the spread of sprayed chemicals, proper ventilation systems, and enforcements to ensure that their exposures are well under permissible limits. Chinese workers routinely lose fingers or arms while making American furniture, appliances, or other metal goods because the machines are old and don't function properly or lack safeguards. And I have actually seen a few things in some factories that I go, oh, my God. I can't believe they're doing that. And last year, just to remind you about our huge trade deficit, we imported $287 billion in goods from China, up $51 billion from a decade ago. And that's because we want cheap things.
Right.
So, you know, you consider worker health and safety a basic human right, but in global economy, responsibility to workers gets lost across international boundaries because, you know, there are safeguards in place in their Chinese system. Under Chinese law, they have a legal right to remain safe from disease and amputations at work, but the law isn't enforced. And that's where the problem remains. And then the companies that employ these Chinese, you know, workers, they do audits to, you know, they visit audit. Well, we do audits on everything that we make, and you want to say we're going to make improvements, we're going to make changes, but they're not always sustainable. In 2005, the Chinese Ministry of Health reported 200 million of China's labor force of 700 million were routinely exposed to toxic chemicals and life-threatening diseases.
Is this manufacturing labor, or is this labor overall?
Manufacturing labor.
All right.
So they're exposed to, and this is the part that's unbelievable. 386,000 Chinese workers died of occupational illnesses in 2005 alone. And the number that lives with these diseases don't include amputations. Millions of limbs were amputated since 1995. They just don't even have a count because there's been so many.
Well, then the factory has an amputation department. Not a good sign.
I know, really. Not a good sign.
Well, we were having an offline conversation about this once, and weren't you telling me that a lot of factories have, like, factory people live at the factory?
Oh, absolutely, do live at the factories,
For like a 2-year stint, so they're there at the factory for 2 years. They're sleeping, eating, everything is
you
taken
do
care
everything
of.
Everything at the factory, yes.
And then after 2 years, you go live your life. Hopefully, you've you've accumulated
some
money.
You made a lot of money. Or you can sign on.
Right.
And if you can stay. Or you can get a more high-paying job in another factory because the workers talk among themselves. There are no unions. Unions are illegal, which is one of the reasons that it's so hard for these guys to get rights because there are no unions. But when you do an audit, for example, which we do, it's a snapshot in time at that particular time in the factory, but audits are always scheduled. So
okay.
They always know when you're coming. So many of them say that you don't smell the real toxins or see the real toxins because they won't do them on the day that the auditors are coming. Then also a lot of them have small off-site factories where other parts of the process are done, and they typically don't go to see those. You only visit the large factory, not the small factory. They talked about this one guy who brushed glue on the soles of New Balance shoes for years and years and years, and is now hospitalized for chronic anemia and myelosporadic anemia. And they never knew that the glue had toxins in it. But that's keeping your shoes together, you know, that
wow.
you're wearing. So, but it's a really excellent story. And there's too few inspectors in China to monitor safeties. One inspector for every 35,000 Chinese workers. And it's just the implementation is bad. And so what they really do, if somebody does get sick, they are required to pay them something. But the amount of money that the factory pays them is so low. But so the moral question is, if you're in the U.S. and you're a manufacturer, here in the U.S., you pay for your workers' medical and your
right.
workers' unemployment benefits, and you have to buy workplace insurance and liability insurance, and you have to pass all the laws. But if you do that overseas, you know, you don't have to do any of that. You know, you just write the order to the factory, and the factory accepts it, and then you can go audit them, and you can make sure that they're not, you know, employing slave labor or child labor, or and they're meeting ethical standards and they're paying their workers what the law says they have to be paid. But, you know, you really can't see it. So this
right.
five-part series discussed all the different, each day they focused on like a lung disease, and then they focused on an amputation. And, oh, it was an amazing series. Again, in Salt Lake Tribune, it was really well done. So being exposed to, God, can you imagine touching batteries and what goes into a battery for 70 hours a week for years and years, you know?
Yeah.
Kidney failure. And then the occupational hospitals where they go are primitive at best, you know? So it's a global economy, you know, but you got to realize somebody's paying the price for it.
And so does that make you feel bad about the fact that your company
does
all its manufacturing in China?
Yeah, because, you know, everybody's saying now the solution is, well, why don't we buy things that are made in the United States? And then I say, well, do you really want to pay, you know, 2.5 or 3 times or 4 times the amount of what you pay?
Right.
Especially all those Walmart shoppers. You go to Walmart for the low prices. But I've read a great book called The Walmart Effect, and they talk about a $5.88 child's dress shirt, you know, and you look at it and you go, wow, $5.88 for this little kid's dress shirt.
Yeah.
Wow, that's an unbelievable price. Well, it's an unbelievable price. And you just got to go, why is it $5.88? Because it's made by people who are not in great circumstances in some very remote foreign country, you know,
right.
that gets, because you have to do the math and go, wow, this is so unbelievable that it's only $5.88. And especially the cost of clothes, too. The price of clothes have fallen 25% since 1995, partly because of the downward pressure put on manufacturers by discount retail chains. And that whole price that we don't even look at is the cost of the environment. And that's also what China's feeling. And there was another big story about China's rivers are being polluted by all of our garment manufacturers, because most people's clothes are made in China. So, you know, so China is, you know, you're in a global economy, and right now they manufacture the world's consumable goods. And they're, you know, they're paying the price with their people and their environment. And at some point, I think it will catch up to
yeah.
us, and we're going to go, you know, morally, maybe it won't be the moral reason that gets us to move, but it's probably going to be the price issue. Or maybe it will be the moral issue. Maybe some people will say, you know, we just can't do this anymore. but
maybe it'll be uncool to wear clothes from China. You know, it is amazing though. I go to Walgreens for something and they'll have like in the front, oh, here's four t-shirts for $10. And I go look at them and they look just like a t-shirt.
I know.
Nothing
they do.
Odd about them. It's like something's wrong here.
Mm-hmm. It is. Something's wrong. And when you think about what it does to the rivers and
but
know.
Most people don't care that much because they don't want to think about all these tough things.
Right. And if you just think, if those four t-shirts had been made in the United States
yeah.
by, say, somebody you knew, right? At a plant that mm-hmm. met all the environmental laws with all the union workers.
It'd be at least $20 each.
Yeah, exactly. You'd be looking at a $20 t-shirt. But do you really need four t-shirts too? Maybe it would be better to buy that one $20 t-shirt made in the United States.
Right.
And we all take responsibility for it.
And we smell. Because we're wearing it and wearing it and wearing it. Well, I've got...
So I'm going to visit one factory while I'm over there.
Oh, good.
Way. So
I'll visit the amputee division.
Yeah, I'll visit the amputee ward.
The ward. Give them our blessing. say we thank them heartily for the tennis shoes.
And then I'll go in and say, can I get that doll for 20 cents less?
Exactly, you American negotiator. Come on, you guys can cut some of this fat.
I think you're taking me for a ride. I need it cheaper.
Exactly. Well, I thought I'd end the show for the next five shows. I have this article from Men's Health called 50 Ways to Beat the Reaper.
Okay.
Basically,
you were going to sing a song, but okay.
No, I wasn't going to sing a song. But if I'm ambitious enough, maybe I'll write a song called 50 Ways to Beat the Reaper. It must be 50 Ways to Beat the Reaper. Maybe I'll do that now that I have my new fancy studio stuff.
That's right.
I don't quite fully understand how to work it all. So we'll go through 10 of them each time.
All right.
First one, this is the ways to beat the Reaper. Number one, drink at least 5 8-ounce glasses of water a day. Scientists at Loma Linda University found that men who drank this amount of H2O were 54% less likely to suffer a fatal heart attack than those who drank 2 glasses or less per day.
Wow.
Take a laugh break. Hopefully that's what you do when you listen to this show. Watching 15 minutes of funny video can improve blood flow to your heart by 50%.
Wow.
So take a laugh break. I guess they're assuming a laugh has to come from a funny video. So maybe that's why YouTube is so big. Don't go to work sick.
There you go.
Over a 3-year period, men who clocked in despite feeling the weather had double the heart attack risk of guys who stayed in bed. In other words, when you're sick, your body's telling you, help me heal myself. Mm-hmm. Don't go in and work. I know it's like, oh, you're a wimp if you stay home and you're sick, and you're macho
especially
if you come in.
Especially if you don't look sick, right?
Right.
If you look like you're probably okay, but...
But if you want to live longer, stay home.
Yeah.
Put out the fire in your chest. Ouch.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Untreated heartburn can lead to heart attack, according to a study in an International Journal of Cardiology. All right. So what do you do? What do you do about heartburn? You go to a doctor,
yeah,
I guess?
Yeah, I guess you've got to get it treated. Okay. I guess they're saying don't take over-the-counter stuff forever and ever. You probably have some other problem.
Well, actually, here's a natural remedy. Analyze your diet. Don't make a habit of drinking wine, juice, or carbonated beverages, all of which are highly acidic and may trigger heartburn.
Huh.
Okay, number five, indulge your chocolate craving. This is another... We keep talking about chocolate keeps popping up.
Chocolate has such amazing benefits.
In a 15-year study, Dutch scientists... That's funny to me.
Why?
I don't know. Dutch? No, I'm sure Dutch, people from Holland, are some of them are scientists. I'm sure they're very smart because they're smart people.
And they're tall people, too.
And they're tall people. But, you know, they are studying chocolate.
Okay.
Come to our chocolate laboratory. Willy Wonka. His Dutch scientists determined that men who ate just 4 grams of cocoa a day had half the risk of dying from heart disease than those who ate less. That's the equivalent of 225-calorie Hershey's Kisses.
Oh, that's
an amount
bad.
That can fit in any diet. So.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
I'm going to get some kisses, and I'm going to start doing that. It sounds good. I'm not a big chocolate fan, but I don't hate it. Say no to Fruit Loops. Wow. In a review of 53 studies, Australian researchers found that regularly eating cereal made from refined grains raises insulin. That's what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Insulin and C-reactive proteins and lowers good cholesterol, all factors that boost your odds of developing heart disease. By the way, the one thing I did mention and the thing that I led off the show with is that these high insulins, insulin levels that carbohydrates create, especially the poorly refined carbohydrates, but all of them do, they not only make you fat, but they also increase every potential of getting all these diseases, which is even probably more important in the end of the day. Okay. A better choice for your morning bowl, post-shredded wheat cereal.
Fiber.
100% whole grains and contains no sugar. Take a magnesium, number seven, take a magnesium supplement. Over an 18-year period, French researchers... determined that men with a higher blood level of magnesium are 40% less likely to die of any cause than those with the lowest levels. Magnesium can make multivitamins too bulky, so add a 250-milligram pill from iHerb.com, I-H-E-R-B.com, or GNC for your daily regimen. All right, I might do that. This is from Men's Health, Gretchen. This may not be as useful to you. But
well, some of it you would think works for both men and women.
Yeah, I would think so. Burn 1,100 calories a week. Duke University scientists discovered that this amount of exercise prevents the accumulation of visceral adipose tissue, the dangerous belly fat that causes artificial inflammation. Now, the science that we led off the show with would disagree with this assertion, but hey, whatever. Falling short, join a league. A recent British medical journal study reported that people who exercised in groups boosted their average calorie burn by $500 calories a week. All right, number nine, take a daily multivitamin. Researchers at the university, I always wonder, is this really doing anything? Researchers at the University of California, Berkeley discovered that this does help prevent the DNA damage that causes cancer. They prefer Centrum Silver. And finally, number 10. Again, I have more of these, but I'll share them in the next coming weeks. Hit the weights. University of Michigan scientists found that men who completed 3 total body weight workouts a week for 2 months lowered their diastolic blood pressure, the bottom number, by an average of 8 points. That's enough to reduce the risk of stroke by 40% and a heart attack by 15%. Now, I know a lot of this stuff does contradict what I talked about at the head of the article. So...
But this is,
use your judgment in good moderation. These are good common sense things. Yeah.
What's a body weight workout? Full body weight workout.
Full body workout. It just means you're working all your muscles.
Oh, okay. I thought it said body weight. Okay.
No.
I thought it was a certain type of weight you had to lift or something.
Okay. No.
Well, that's good to know.
Well.
So we'll see.
Was that helpful?
That was helpful. I mean, I think some of that totally applies to women.
Yeah.
They say women should work with weights, and you should take a multivitamin, and I don't know about the magnesium, but I don't see.
Yeah, whatever. So check it out, the magnesium. Our phone number, if you want to call. Oh, by the way, we had a nice comment from Mike. We had a lot of interesting things about the elevator theory.
Yes, that was a good comment.
Yeah,
I thought that was good.
He was basically, he kind of said, you know, while most people wouldn't be, it does provide a facility for people to be jerks. And for more timid people... to not, in other words, he had a, well, I thought it was really interesting. One example is if some guy is racing to the 8th floor, he asks his fellow passengers, listen, I got this presentation, I'm late, it's awful, can I bypass your numbers and just go shoot up there? He said most people are going to say yes, but some people that are a little bit on the timid side that wouldn't stand up might feel...
taken advantage of
mm-hmm. and at the end of the day go postal after this happens too much. And then we had another comment on our show not being late. Do you remember her name? Sorry, I didn't look at my notes before I ended the studio, but thank you for that. That was very nice email, actually. But our comment line is 206-333-1003. That's 206-333-1003. If you'd like to call and leave a message, we'll play it. And otherwise, have a great trip, Gretchen.
Thank you.
And have a great Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yes.
And when we come back... when we come back, I'll be a year older. How about that? And we'll try to get a couple podcasts
in December. Zooming towards middle age.
Towards it. But you know what they say...
When?
You know, what is it? I just heard last night. 30 is the next 60. Is the new 60. So I think the older we get...
You mean 60 is the new 30.
60 is the new 30, sorry. But the older we get, that all keeps changing. Right. 70 is going to be the new 20 at some point.
Good news for Mick Jagger,
just
right?
Just rationalization. Hey, yeah, Mick Jagger has a new album out, by the way, new CD. It's like the best of Mick Jagger, but it's not like songs you know. It's sort of his solo stuff that he likes.
Right.
And I heard some snippets on NPR. Pretty good. Yeah. Guy's got talent. Mm-hmm. Gotta give him that. So have a great Thanksgiving. Eat lots of turkey. Don't lay off on the mashed potatoes and bread and stuffing.
But have some chocolate.
Have lots of chocolate.
And some magnesium.
And magnesium. Instead of pumpkin pie, have some magnesium pie. Bye.
Bye.